Hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Game Junction Podcast. This is episode 79. Obviously, this is a pre-recorded episode, but how's everything going for you, Brandon?
Pretty good. Had a good weekend. Busy weekend, but good weekend.
Busy but good.
Was able to see Godzilla. Super excited about that. I was also able to see Ghostbusters. Something weird happened. I guess we'll just go ahead and kind of dive into that. So this is going to be a little bit of an off-the-cuff. You know, we're usually live. I will be at Super Cincy Expo as you're watching this. I will be there, literally be there as this is airing. So, but anyway, I guess we'll dive into Godzilla a little bit first, maybe talk about some news that's happened a little bit over the weekend and stuff like that. But I was able to see Godzilla and Ghostbusters, which is kind of crazy. So basically, person there knew I was coming, and he gave me their, I guess they get a spare theatrical poster in case there's like creases, damage, anything like that with shipping for their theater, the actual posters they put up in the billboard type deals outside. They gave me that, which is really cool. Don't know what I'm going to do with it yet, because I think that's something that probably needs framed, but that's probably going to be a very expensive frame because that's not like a commercial. Well, it is. Is it? Am I thinking the right word? Would it be a commercial poster? No, it's not a it's not a consumer, but you can't buy it, essentially.
Yeah, it's like an advertising poster.
Yeah, so it's like a promo piece. So that was really nice of them. But I got to watch Ghostbusters after, too. So I was gone for a long time, and I had not gotten any sleep the night before. Like, I didn't think I was going to get through Godzilla. Almost fell asleep a couple of times, not because it's a bad movie at all, but I was exhausted. But did during Ghostbusters when it was later. It was weird. I was fine then. Wasn't, like, almost falling asleep. Yeah, so I watched both. We'll talk about Godzilla a bit, but I'll just say with Ghostbusters, big fan, but I was pretty let down with the movie. I thought it was kind of just middle of the road, like not a bad movie. Definitely wouldn't say to not watch it. It's fine, but it has a lot of problems, and I think it has some pacing issues. The build up to what would be the climax is just not really there. The climax is not. Doesn't feel like a climax to me, but it's still like I said, middle of the road is not a bad movie. I don't think it's a bad movie. As a Ghostbusters fan, especially of 1 and 2, and then the video game, which is basically 3, which has been like kind of confirmed that is essentially Ghostbusters 3. It doesn't feel like any of those. That video game, I don't know if you played it, Mark, but it's phenomenal. Really, really good. It's a great game. Basically, is Ghostbusters 3. Director of, you know, the Ghostbusters films has talked about that and said, yeah, basically 3. Didn't live up to that for me. But I guess we talk about Godzilla, though.
Yeah, so I know you saw it earlier in the day. I saw it. I got like a 10 o'clock showing, so I'm leaving the movie theater at like midnight on Saturday night or Sunday morning, however you're looking at it. But it was a very enjoyable film. Good, you know, popcorn movie to kind of shut your brain off and just, you know, watch giant monster kaijus fight each other.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much how I felt about it. There was issues with it still, but it was a good movie. Overall, it was a good movie. Definitely enjoyed it. In my opinion, much better than the Ghostbusters film. I thought that we talked about it. So basically, when you are watching this will be a live premiere. We have a Godzilla video out. Should have Godzilla review out. This is something a little different from the channel. If you are an OG for Game Junction, you will remember that me and Mark used to cover news and all kinds of stuff back in the day. I mean, we still get views on like our One Piece video, and that show has been out for a long time now.
The game, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, so not even the game, the show. Like we did on the reveal of that.
Oh,
like,
yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah, we still get views on that. So, but if you're an OG Game Junction viewer, you'll remember that me and Mark used to do that sort of style of stuff, and it was a lot of fun. It's simplistic but fun, and people seem to enjoy it. So we want to get some different stuff out there. Mark's going to be doing some anime stuff soon. Yeah. Getting back to Godzilla, definitely good. Plot holes. I didn't like the Scar King. What else do I want to say? I don't know. What else do you want to say besides referencing, you know, going to the video?
Kind of what we already said was, you know, to combat the bad human writing they have in these movies, which I feel like kind of carries on to this movie. I feel like the weakest part of it are actually the human characters. They just kind of, I still think the writing's weak. They just cut them out of like half the movie. So they're just not there. So, you know, to me, that made it a lot more enjoyable.
I don't want to say it made it more enjoyable to me that they didn't cut them out because they were there at the beginning, especially.
They're there. And then as the movie goes on, they become less and less, you know,
100%.
You know, important in the plot or even in the plot, like at all. But I felt like as I was watching it, that's the weakest part of the movie. This is the beginning that they're in the movie. Or I felt like later on that they're only there for, you know, massive plot dump type thing. And it's like, okay, now it's going to move on to the rest of the story. And it goes back to, you know, Kong and Godzilla and everything else that's going on.
Yeah, we're talking about this, I was looking at something here where apparently ending explained where it is referencing a new movie. That was one of our things that, you know, we don't want to give away everything. I definitely watched the video, but I will say there's no post credit scene. We both sat down and waited. I was the only one left in the theater. There were two other people waiting, and then when they saw that the credits was rolling for a minute, I mean, it felt like it was rolling forever. Like, it would not stop. I got a whole like minute and a half recording of the credits scene. Yeah, I put it on my story. And I was like, cheebity Christmas. Like, is this because, you know, with some of like the Marvel films and stuff, they'll have like a mid credit screen and then like a post credit screen. So we're so kind of used to it. We're like so used to a post credits. And we figured that it would, you know, lead up what's next.
There's like a chance for it, because because the movie obviously feels like it just ends really abruptly with a terrible soundtrack to go with that ending credit scene. But
yeah. And then, I mean, I guess one thing that we do know is that there's a lot going on with Hollow Earth, whether or not that will be a part of the next movie. I guess it's kind of debatable.
I think it has to, like, because there's so much unexplored with that whole world and stuff like that you could probably dive into. But will it actually take advantage of it? Probably not. But
I mean, like all of even Skull Island, like there's like a lot of stuff they could do. Like if we're going back and like obviously this is its own timeline and its own thing. But if they were to reference, what's it? They got to, right? These are called Titans, not Kaiju in these movies, which I don't like.
They're still kaiju, but
yeah, they call them Titans. Even Suko is a Titan, apparently, which I just found out recently. But it's didn't care for the antagonist too much. I just thought Scar King was kind of weak and he didn't seem intimidating. He felt to me, he felt like a weaker Kong, which he ended up being because he, you know,
yeah.
Sort of is, and we don't want to give away spoilers, but like you see in the trailer some of that, like you could tell
it's an underwhelming villain.
I felt very underwhelming. For me, I felt like that might be the weakest point for me. It's hard to say because, you know, there's plot holes. I don't think the plot holes bothered me as much because they ended up just really making it like a popcorn kaiju fighting Titan fighting, whatever, flick. And it was interesting, you know, to see. And like you see in the some of the trailers and the spots with Kong's arm and like what happens with, you know, all the stuff with that, which is interesting. Yeah. It actually, you know, going back, I believe it was a animated series where Kong had a robotic arm that they really like dove into. And made like where I don't want to say for sure, it's been so long, but I feel like it was able to like shoot missiles and stuff or something. But I can't remember. There's been quite a few Kong animated series. There was one that came out like a few years ago.
I think
it was really bad in CGI. It was.
I didn't think it was CG. I thought it was. I think it was full, just regular.
There was an animated series that was like.
But yeah, I think it came out like last year in 2023, Skull Island, which is more of like a side story that I think came out on Netflix that had to deal with it's technically still in the same MonsterVerse timeline, but it has to deal with just, you know, random people kind of washing up on Skull Island and interacting with Kong and stuff like that.
Oh,
I don't know if that's the same one you're
no, this is not what I'm talking about at all. If you look up, I think it was just called Kong, that anime. It was CGI. It was like straight CGI. It was that terrible.
Yeah,
terrible CG. It's not. No, this was a Netflix show.
I guess if you were really interested. Like, this whole MonsterVerse technically has a decently in-depth timeline with two spinoff series. So in chronological or in-universe series, it obviously starts off with Kong Skull Island, which came out in 2017, is the oldest. I think it's just after Vietnam. Then it's this Skull Island animated series on Netflix that came out in 2023. Then it's supposed to be the 2014 Godzilla. Then it goes Monarch Legacy Monsters, which also came out in 2023, which is the Apple TV series that it's supposed to plug in, because it takes place in a wide timeline, I believe so, but it's supposed to like plug in a lot of elements within the movies.
That is the only thing I haven't watched, which is I don't know why I haven't watched it. I should have by
now.
It's
on Apple TV.
Because I've literally never watched anything on there ever, but I do need to watch this. I think that, you know, maybe there's something that we're missing that was plugged in there, because that's what it does. That series was meant to plug in the human elements into kind of everything that's happening. And I think points through the series, right?
Yeah.
Like different timelines.
From what I was looking to, as far as like, if you watch like an in-depth lore video on this timeline, I felt like a lot of the actual lore elements and the actual best, probably, you know, human writing is in that series. Cause so much of that series takes place that has such a massive impact on, you know, where even leading up to just the regular Godzilla movie, like everything in between and what's going on takes place within television show. Sorry.
Monarch Legacy of Monsters. Yeah. I feel like we probably did ourselves a disservice by not watching this. Just so like you guys know on the podcast, if you are interested, which I am going to go and watch it, because I do want to sort of be filled into everything. And I know that other kaiju are introduced in the series. I'm aware of some of it. But you can watch the first episode for free, and you can also get a free trial. Just watch the whole thing and then cancel. So I am probably going to do that. Actually, you know what? I signed up for this thing. I got to remember to cancel. If you cancel it, if you do the thing I normally do when I sign up for something that's paid and then cancel right away, you can't do it with this, but it's just like Apple thing where you get like all of their stuff in one bundle and it's like $36 a month or something. But you get like all their stuff. So I actually have this right now. So I need to watch it. But I think that was probably the main thing. But I know like Kurt Russell is in this series, and so that's interesting, but I do know that it introduces other kaiju and it fills in a lot of plot holes. So we probably did do ourselves a disservice, because this was pretty much leading up to this film. It looks like it ran from November 17th to December 1st. So, I mean, literally a few months before this movie came out.
I didn't even know it existed. Ended.
Oh, well,
before a few days ago.
Yeah, I knew it existed. I feel like maybe I should have said something to you, but I also had not watched it, so
yeah, because at least in their advertised timeline that I was reading, after that, then it goes just, you know, King of the Monsters, Godzilla vs. Kong, and then obviously, you know, the new Empire after that kind of rounds out this roughly put together timeline.
So, say that timeline one more time.
Well, it's weird because I think this Monarch series
runs through
spans a lot of these movies. But there, the timeline that I got off of the wrap, really quickly, just the chronological in order universe would be Kong Skull Island, Godzilla, Monarch Legacy of Monsters, King of the Monsters, Godzilla vs. Kong, and then, you know, the new Empire, the one that just came out.
So it's almost like pretty much how it was made. Except
more or less.
Skull Island animated series.
Because I think if you wanted to go the release order, it's, you know, Godzilla, Kong Skull Island, King of Monsters, Godzilla vs. Kong. Then it's the Skull Island TV series, the Monarch TV series, and then the New Empire. So for the most part, it's in order, minus some of the older series that take place, you know, in the past that are supposed to like fill in the plot, which would mainly be Kong Skull Island and then the Monarch TV series.
So I will say that there is also more of this that's canon other than just that. It's not plugged in there, which I am aware of. And I do own one of them and have not read it. But there are graphic novels that are tied into the MonsterVerse as well. And the one that I have is Kingdom Kong. But there's also, there's an omnibus that has all of them in it, a hardcover collection of all five graphic novels. But there's Godzilla Awakening, Skull Island, The Birth of Kong, Godzilla Aftershock, Godzilla Dominion, and Kingdom Kong. So, yeah. So, there, I mean, there, this is a pretty diverse, it's got a lot of story to it. So, I think that, like, you know, we may have done ourselves a disservice of not watching that. But at the same time, like, you have to be pretty, you got to care a lot to want to dive into the other mediums. Now, the Skull Island TV series, that fills in some other stuff as well. So I love that they made pretty much everything that has came out for this is all canon, which is cool because that doesn't usually happen for any, pretty much any series ever. Like, you've got all this stuff that comes out and, like, none of it's, like, canon to any of it.
Because you brought it up, and I think, because while you bring it up, I was looking through some stuff. I believe the character that John C. Reilly is Hank Marlowe and John Goodman's Bill Randa character in Skull Island are, both those characters are actually in that Monarch TV series, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, okay.
Unless it actually goes back to their past in Skull Island, which I don't think it does. I believe it's the actual Monarch series that expands those two characters and, like, well, how'd you get here in the first place? Expand, like, everything that actually happened. I believe that happens in that movie, not in that TV series, but that's just more how, like, it expands the lore and how character, like, one character played by different people are in multiple, you know, series and movies, and it's kind of, like, spread out and how everything is, like, interconnected.
Yeah, out in here, it looks like roughly about 36. Give or take, Titans have been introduced, and there's also a variant of two of them, have actually been introduced, like actual Titans, and then there's like a crap ton of other monsters that aren't considered Titans that have been introduced into the series, and then there's super species that have been introduced, and it looks like just a rough guesstimate about probably like 20 super species, which we see right at the beginning of the New Empire, one of those species, which was, I thought was actually like a really cool intro fight scene, like from the movie, but it's a spoilers it first 5 minutes of the movie. But, there's a lot that goes into, this, Monsterverse stuff. And apparently there's, some other stuff. I didn't know this. This game is absolutely dreadful and very, very expensive. Like, very expensive. We got a very small print run. I don't know if you know about it, but the Godzilla, it's just called Godzilla on PS4. Do you know about this game? That goes for
I do know about the game.
Okay, it's horrible. So I owned it when it came out, and I unfortunately wish I had not sold it because, A, I like Godzilla, but it was bad. It was really bad. I played through it and it was dreadful, and I sold it, and it's worth a lot of money now. But anyway, I didn't realize, I must be an idiot or something, but I didn't realize that the Monsterverse Godzilla was a playable character in it. Kind of interesting.
I remember seeing it in the stores and I'm like, that just looks like a bad game. So I never picked it up.
Unfortunately, most Godzilla games are bad. Not all of them. There are some fun ones like Destroy All Monsters on GameCube. I guess it's called Destroy All Monsters Melee on GameCube is pretty fun. A lot of them end up being fighting games because obviously the kaijus fight.
Yeah.
But like there's some, we just talked about, we didn't just talk about, but in the review, how Godzilla, the new Godzilla is in Roblox. Or no, Suko. Suko and Godzilla made it to Roblox. Dang, they're really making it. But apparently there is a Monsterverse video game developed by Hunted Cow Studios called Godzilla X Kong Titan Chasers. It releases on July 31st to PC and I think mobile. Yeah, PC and mobile. And if you want some more Godzilla Kong experience, you can check that out. Interesting stuff for
definitely
sure.
Definitely looks like a mobile game.
It does, but it's going to be on PC. So
I probably won't play it, but that's because it just looks like crap. But that's a personal thing. Video games. I'm sorry.
What else have we got?
It's just because how the pre-recorded is a little different, so it's not going to be as news heavy as it usually is. There was something that came out earlier today, actually, on Sunday, about where a CDPR came out and said, or the CFO, Piotr Nebel, I'm butchering that name, but their CFO recently went on the record saying, essentially, microtransactions have no place in single-player games. So as much as that company has had a lot of bad press, I agree with them. If it's a single-player game, there shouldn't be any microtransactions at all. That's like a free-to-play or like an online, you know, game type thing. Even as much as I don't like it in those games, you know, I think we're throwing shots at Ubisoft here. If it's a single-player game, why do I have to buy for skins in this game? Like, that's just scummy, if you ask me.
One of those things, like microtransactions, and I could say right now, I've never bought a microtransaction thing in any single player game ever. I bought DLC and expansion, and that's it. Like one I still got to get is the Scarlet and Violet. To wrap that up, I need to finish that still. I haven't bought it yet, but I must say I kind of disagree, because if it's like a skin or something like that, that's completely unneeded, that you just, if you don't care, you don't care. It's kind of not like throwing it in your face. It's like, oh, I'm an uber fan of this game. I'm going to be playing it for 200 hours, say like The Witcher or, you know, something that's very long. And you want to do it, then it's there. But if, as long as it's not something like the Dragon's Dogma 2 stuff, where it's like a fast travel or like something like that. If it's a skin, I don't really care. If you want your character to look better for a dollar or different, then okay. Like, cause they've thrown like collaboration skins or something like that in like single player games before. And like, if you want that while you're playing your game, then whatever. Like, I don't care. It's not in your face. It's not something that's like should already be in the game. I don't care for them, and I have never bought one. That I remember. I don't remember ever buying anything like that. But I like microtransactions in general. But like, if you want your character to look different in your single player game, whatever. However, we used to just get that, like Spider-Man on the PS1. We used to just get all those skins. You either could use a cheat code to get the skins, or you unlock them somehow, or whatever. Now they're kind of hidden behind a paywall. But if it's like a collaboration that happened later with the game, like, oh, they collaborated with Batman, so now Batman's playable in this game a year later. I mean, how can you really, you know, something that's baked into the game? Maybe it wasn't planned.
I think it is debatable. I 100% disagree. If it's single player game, this skin took you probably a handful of hours to develop. I'm not paying money for it because I think it's scummy. If it's an online game where there's an online, not only constantly adding new content, but you're playing on a server which constantly adds money, where there's a constant, you know, the company has to constantly be shelling out money, I understand that. But in a single player game that I'm playing on my PC, that the bulk of the development is in the main game and then whatever extra, you know, story content, that's fine. But like, you don't need that extra money. If you're doing it, you should be doing it just to, you know, here's some new stuff. This is kind of how you get it. But if you're charging money for it in a single player game that you're not hosting a server for, it shouldn't be in there. Nobody should accept it. I disagree. If there's a skin that's tied into the DLC that you're paying for, that's one thing. But I disagree with when it comes to single player games that microtransactions have any place. I think they absolutely have zero place in single player games.
Well, I don't like it. And I don't want to be on the side of defending it, because I'm not going to defend microtransactions at all. I feel like a lot of that stuff should be given in the game, which some companies do. Sometimes they give you, oh, this game's been out for 6 months. Here's a free update. You've got these available to you now. Like, here's a great example with Sony, actually. Ghost of Tsushima, they offered way later a free multiplayer mode for the game available. So that was cool. I think it's called Legends. But I mean, yeah, like it shouldn't have to pay for it. It's
especially from these larger studios where it's have this money. You've made a crap ton of money. How many millions of dollars have you made? You're just trying to you're greedy and trying to squeeze as much money in trying to gatekeep as much content behind a paywall as possible. And I absolutely hate it.
Like I said, I don't like it myself. I'm not a fan. But some people will defend it. I was just trying to play devil's advocate there with that, because we've had people defend it on the podcast before, and it's defending it. It's a hot topic that people feel two different ways for. And also, you know, another thing to add into that is that these days, it's unfortunate that the generations behind us are they're numb to it. Like they don't know anything else. You know what I mean? They didn't experience the generation of not having to worry about that, not having free updates, you know, even when it came to the generation of always being online with PS3 and 360 and Wii. They don't have that. They don't have that experience of the cash grabs and the stuff like that. So, I mean, that part is unfortunate, you know, truly unfortunate. But I at the end of the day, I do agree that it shouldn't. It doesn't have a place. It really does. And who was it that said this?
CDPR's CFO. I'm not even going to try to pronounce his name because I can't say.
We butcher so many names on this podcast. so many. I like I said, don't agree with it. So
now he did come out and say that they're working on a multiplayer game, and he wasn't going to rule that out as far as like when it comes to multiplayer games, but as far as single player games, like it has no place in these games. Multiplayer is a little different. Especially when you're playing on a server, you know, that, you know, costs money to run constantly and stuff like that. That's one thing. As long as it's, you know, only cosmetic and it's not, you know, $60 for a skin type thing, we're just clearly ripping somebody off.
Yeah.
But, you know, you take the good with the bad.
Yeah. We do have some sad news that was reported actually yesterday that I saw this. Chance Perdomo, I believe it is. It could be Perdomo. I can't remember. But he was in Gen V, and what I know him from is Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. I loved that show. I think they did. That was a great reboot of that franchise that did the darker side of things, and I thought it was really cool. But unfortunately, he was in a motorcycle accident. No one else was involved with it. And he did pass. There was a statement made. It is with heavy hearts that we share the news of Chance Perdomo's untimely passing as a result of a motorcycle accident. Publicist said in a statement, authorities have advised that no other individuals were involved. His passion for the arts and insatiable appetite for life was felt by all who knew him, and his warmth will carry on in those who he loved dearest. We ask, please respect the family's wish for privacy as they mourn the loss of their beloved son and brother. He was, you know, pretty young, so 27, younger than us. And
that's unfortunate.
Yeah. Sucks. We've had to, seems like, report on a lot of deaths here recently, but born in 96, plan was originally to go into law, but he instead moved to London to pursue acting and joined the National Youth Theatre. But yeah, he was known for the Gen 5, which I have not watched. But he was in a few other things, such as After We Fell, Moomin Valley, After Every Happy, and After Everything. The Gen 5 second season has been delayed indefinitely following the tragic news, because he was a big part of that show. I'm very aware of it. I just have not. I haven't watched it. I haven't had a lot of time to watch things. I've had to be very, very, very selective with anything I've watched. This Godzilla was only the second thing I watched this entire year. Last year, I think I watched three things the whole year. So, but yeah, sad news there. So, all respects to the family. And
yeah, absolutely.
I will say, I have been seeing a lot of stuff. About Dragon's Dogma 2. A lot of people really kind of on the defensive side. There's been, you know, some statements made afterwards about the fast travel business. And I mean, apparently, so I haven't played it. I don't want to say this wrong, because I don't want to pee people off. I had a short go semi-viral, had like 400,000 views or something, and tons and tons and tons of comments. And apparently, I want to confirm this, but apparently you can unlock the fast travel. But we, from what we understood, is that the creator of the game said it didn't make sense. Like, it took me. So I'm a little confused here.
There's no defending pain for fast travel. If it's unlockable, it should be only unlockable throughout the story. The fact that they offer it at all as a microtransaction should be shamed.
Well, let me, I don't like to read a lot of articles, but I'll reference this one from, this is Digital Trends. So this guy said that Dragon's Dogma 2 changed how he looked at fast travel in video games. He said, "I never had a reason to give much thought to fast travel in games before starting Dragon's Dogma 2. In most open world games that include the feature, the only requirement for accessing it is reaching points of interest," which is true. We discussed, like, that makes sense. Yeah. You know, be able to explore the world first before you just straight up have fast travel. Because I feel like that does probably take away the experience from most games if you just get it right off the bat. But he said, "It isn't how it operates in the game. Fast travel is based around a limited currency called Fairy Stones." So that was one of the things in the comments of the short that I had. Well, I guess technically real, was that you were buying Fairy Stones to fast travel. You weren't buying fast travel, but it's like the same thing, right? Like, it's the same concept. You're buying a currency to pay for the fast travel. But he said that the game is slow and steady. He said he didn't even find the requisite item, the fast travel, until several hours into the playthrough. But by then, my mindset around navigating the world had been established. My first few adventures in Dragon's Dogma 2 felt somewhat similar to my first Souls game, in the sense I fell into the trap of approaching it like a more traditional open world RPG to disastrous results. My initial big mistake was underestimating the nighttime. So I have heard that the nighttime in this game is absolutely brutal. Like very, very brutal is what I've heard. And in general, because to this game, and I'm like on the fence of or not, like, you know, I think that I want to wait for a sale.
Yeah,
I think that's where I'm at. Like, I really want to play it still, because, like, I've watched some gameplay and I've watched some bigger names talk about and stuff, like Moist Critical and things like that. And, like, it does. I don't know how much gameplay you've watched of it, but, like, it does look like a very good game. It just seems like there was maybe some missteps and the microtransaction stuff is silly. Whether that converts to an in-game currency to then pay for said thing doesn't matter. So microtransactions
in a $70 game, there should be no microtransactions.
Yeah, it's a $70 game, which is standard price now. You can't really defend that, because it's changed video games forever, because it's
a price tag.
I mean, it's still changed video games whether you pay for it or not. Like, that's a,
well, if literally nobody could look back to their game, it would force them to go away from that model.
Yeah, but that's not going to happen. Like we talked about earlier, that generations before us know nothing else. They know nothing of a game with no you know what I mean? Unless it's like actually a AAA game that does it right and there aren't any. But, like, even for instance, Ghost of Tsushima, there's stuff that you can buy there that's a single player game. They added on that multiplayer mode for free, but there's still, like, stuff there. Like, yeah. I'm struggling to think of something that's single player where there isn't microtransactions, other than pretty much anything that's Nintendo. Like, that's the only one that Nintendo has dabbled in that, but not a lot. And most of it's been DLC or expansion, like an expanded story or something like that. I'm struggling to think of something right off the top of my head. Can you think of anything, like, in the recent 4 years that a single player with no microtransactions?
I was trying to think, but immediately now without, like, verifying.
See, that's sad. It's sad. So
Bethesda ruined gaming forever with their damn horse armor.
Oh God, yeah. Oh God.
Where it all started, everything traces its roots back to Bethesda being greedy.
Which sucks because I mean, like I've said this multiple times. Skyrim is not my favorite Elder Scrolls game. It just isn't. I like it. Not a bad game at all. I know people that played through that game hundreds of times. You know, it's been on every platform ever, literally everything. It's kind of like GTA and Minecraft in that aspect, that it's like literally on everything. At this point, I feel like it can play on a potato because it's not
Alexa,
like
play Skyrim.
Exactly.
Alexa, eat 30 cheese wheels. That was a good video, I'm not gonna lie.
Wait, what video did I miss?
When Bethesda made fun of it, you can play on everything, and they made the video. I don't know what I thought it was one of the E3s. They made the video with I can't remember the name of the comedian who plays Alexa, or who plays Skyrim on as Alexa, pretty much. It was just it's like Skyrim.
Was it Bill Burr?
No, it wasn't Bill Burr.
Okay. I don't know.
Bill Burr probably knows absolutely nothing about video games.
Oh no, he does. He does. He knows about video games. I've dove a lot into. I'm a big comedy fan too. A lot of people don't know that, but I'm really into stand-up.
Yeah, so
as well.
It was at the E3 2018 is when they shared it.
That's really loud.
Oh, it's a Michael Key. Keegan Michael Key. He's a comedian.
Keegan Michael Key. I don't know. I'd have to look up, but yeah. So yeah, I'm just not.
But I know. You bring that up, but apparently this year is going to be the Elder Scrolls 30th anniversary from when it first came, when Elder Scrolls Arena came out in 94. So Elder Scrolls has been around for 30 years now.
Dang, making us feel old. We're 30, so it came out when we were just born. Interesting.
You never played some of these games, but have you ever gotten around to playing any of the older games?
Yeah, I have. I actually had the Elder Scrolls game on the N-Gage, which was Pockets. I'm trying to think here. I have to look up. I think it had an extended name. I think it was Elder Scrolls Pockets. Elder Scrolls Travel Shadow Key, which is a very expensive game now. It's like the most sought after for the, and there's some, I'll tell you what, the N-Gage is a good platform. I love the system, and it is obviously notorious for being doubled as a cell phone, right? It's a cell phone that takes cartridge video games. It's insane, but there's some cool stuff on there. Tomb Raider's on there. There's Sonic N. There's a game called Pathway to Glory. That's an RTS and a lot of fun. There's a lot of good N-Gage games. Do you know anything about the N-Gage?
I've never played it before of having money or knowing, you know, being super into gaming.
Well, I obviously got it later. I didn't have a cell phone in 2004, 2005, whatever. I didn't get a cell phone until I started running cross country so I could call my parents to pick me up. That's when I got one. I think towards the end of my sophomore year, I got one. Which, I mean, it's not crazy I'll tell you what, a lot of people had them. I even remember in middle school at the time, and I parents wouldn't let me. And then I got a prepaid, what were they called?
Like a Nokia or something like that?
It was a Nokia, but I forget what, like, the prepaid.
You buy minutes and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yep. Had to buy minutes. Had to do that. Did you know that's still a thing? A thing.
Yeah, I think it still is, which is crazy because like everyone's gone the whole unlimited route. But I mean, I think of having to buy minutes. I'm like, that is like, you know, a 10, 15, 20 year old thing at this point is what it feels like.
It's older than that. I mean, because there were cell phones and technically, like, you know, cell phones and cars. I don't know if you know about that. The car cell phones, but the they called them like phones in a bag.
Which you could literally, you know, beat somebody with. That's how big and heavy it was.
Yeah, I'm looking at them now. I've always wanted to stumble across one at a thrift store or something because they go for a lot of money, and I just think cool.
You gonna put it in your car and be like, hey, hang on, let me open my middle console and, you know, call somebody.
I am going to extend it. Go, yes, I'm going to go pick up a girl on a date, be like, oh, sorry, I have to take a business call real quick on the way to the movie theater. And I unzip my bag.
Sell.
Yeah. Absolutely not. You need to make that work. Pull out my bag phone, take the call, and then we make our way to the theater. But no, they're so cool. I mean, like that concept, they look of the time, and I love it. No Nokia bag phone. So awesome.
Yeah.
But
I've actually played the, I think Arena is the only game I haven't at least tried to play.
I played it. Yeah.
I have played Morrowind, and it's definitely, some of these older games have just not aged well.
I like, so
you know, from a lot of the other stuff, like I'm not the biggest fan of it. I like some of the added benefits of knowing where I'm going just because it saves me time. I don't have, you know, 3 months during the summer just to play a game constantly and kind of figure stuff out. But I have played Morrowind and Daggerfall. I think Daggerfall is far more brutal of a game than Morrowind is, even without the added benefit.
So there was a point in time where I was like really, really, really into the Elder Scrolls series, which I still like it now. Like I'm really looking forward to the next one. But I like emulated a bunch of like older kind of, I guess you call them spinoff games, because that Travel Shadow Key was just one of several of the Travel series. And I cannot remember for the life of me the name of the other games. There's a few more. Let me check. Stormbold and Dawnstar. So I had to emulate these because they are but own games of that time, like ones that you essentially you just can't get now. But I've emulated a bunch of like some like spinoffs and things like that. So like I really got into the series like that. But Oblivion is my favorite. Oblivion's my favorite, and then I think Morrowind would probably be second for me. Some of the very early games, like I said, I played Arena. I think it's a fine game. It's good. It's good for being a DOS game. Played Daggerfall. Played Battlespire. What else is there?
I don't remember if it was
Redguard. Redguard. Yeah. Played Redguard.
I don't remember if this mechanic was in Daggerfall or not, but the one thing I definitely hate about Morrowind is swing and then you miss with the D&D mechanics. I absolutely hated that aspect of that game, where it's like, it's a sword. It's one thing if it's a spell or something like that, but it's like, I'm sitting right next to you, swing a sword, oh, you missed. I'm like, that just drove me up a wall when I played that game.
I feel like it's one of the charms of the game.
I think it's one of the things that, like, oh, this game has aged terribly. I'm like, yeah, Skyrim's combat, you know, has its problems, but it's not like it's completely terrible combat. It's just,
it's a bug. It's a buggy freaking game. Even the anniversary edition, they did a lot of work to that. I don't know if you played.
I've never ran into like a major bug when I played Skyrim.
I played it at launch, man. I'm telling you, it was a 360 buggy mess.
To the anniversary edition, outside of launch, like, you just don't really run across any bugs in the game anymore.
Well, maybe not anymore, but I mean, I played it at launch and it was.
I understand that's the only time it was like a super buggy mess was at launch.
I bought it again on Switch and then just recently learned it has a PS5 native version too, which I may get. I saw that it was like $30 or something, which this is such an old game. $30 feels like a lot to lay down for a game that I played on multiple platforms. Played on 360 and PS3, played on PS4 or on Xbox One, and then bought it for Switch. And then the anniversary edition came out, which made me angry because I don't have it physically.
And it just adds mods to it that you could get online for free. Is really all it does.
Yeah, if you're a PC player, I still gotta order my PC and in the works
at this point. If you're going to play like a game like Skyrim, you'd be better off just getting it on PC, because not only do you have like the unofficial patch, which literally fixes every single bug that Bethesda refuses to fix at this point, which is frustrating, but there's hours or hundreds of hours of content that you could just download online for free that add whole new quests, whole new regions, you know, all new gear, completely changes the way the game can be played. You could play Skyrim like a Dark Souls game, essentially. You can mod it to that level. You can make it look like a current gen game. which is really what has kept that game going, the ability to mod it. But at this point, like, you know, you play the base game, you know, so much, you're like, I need something new at this point if I want to play it.
They remastered it and did the special edition, which was a remaster, and they did fix a lot of stuff. But that was frustrating too, because that's the one I played on Xbox One. That was the special edition. It was a remaster, and then they did the anniversary edition, like you said, mods and stuff. They did rework it and retool it some as well.
When I remember it coming out, the special edition, as far as PC goes, the only major change was, I think it went from, that's the version that went from 32-bit to 64-bit, meaning you could essentially not run into issues when you're modding the game at that point. Was really the only major PC change, is the ability to mod the crap out of the game even more without running into issues when you play it.
Yeah, I'm not sure on the PC front, but I do know, because I remember reading about this, GOG is the only DRM-free version of the game. So, it's the best.
Yeah, because GOG refuses to add, DRM to the game.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you want to buy it, like, that's the way to, as we've discussed, DRM is not, it's not good. You don't own the game. It's another license deal.
DRM doesn't do anything as far as combating piracy as well. It literally doesn't stop you.
It does nothing. It does nothing. But
it's like the smallest, it's like a pebble on the road. Oh, yeah. A slight little bump.
That's one reason I love GOG, is they're very much in support of DRM free games, which I think is great, because PC, as we know, the PC landscape is different, because PC players, basically, not everybody, I do know some people that still get disk drives now, but for 95% of PC players, probably, I'm just going to throw a number out there. And also, PC players just gave up on physical a long time ago. So it's like, it's a weird discussion and debate. And I actually wanted to talk to you about this on the last podcast. But if you're a PC gamer and a console gamer like me, like, I don't play PC games a lot because I'm running a laptop at the moment. In the process of getting a desktop, but I do a little PC gaming on there, and it is a weird sort of thing if you're into consoles and PC, that you're just totally okay with digital only with PC.
It's been digital only for over a day, like probably 10, 15 years at this point.
Right. So like that's kind of what I wanted
I'll
to
say
discuss.
This. Memory was really never an issue when it came to the game. I could have 10 terabyte hard drives that all just have downloaded games on it. Like, just plug it in and play a game at this point.
Yeah. Yep.
But I mean, always
people
different.
Literally sell hard drives that are full of retro games and stuff for you to play. Like RGT85 has done a bunch of videos of companies that compile. They don't just straight throw the games on there. Basically, they build like their own system menus and ways to navigate, and all the games are organized by system and stuff like that. So like, you could go on eBay right now and buy AliExpress especially. But yeah, I mean, like, that's been a thing for a long time for PC, but for console, we care to the bitter end. And we're both physical collectors. Like, could see your stuff back there, that we do prefer physical media. But it's like, for me, even as I order the desktop, I'm like thinking to myself, like, I've already built up a pretty big collection of claiming free games every single month on all these platforms for years now. I mean, I've done it for years, and then I already have a Steam catalog of games I bought from sales throughout the years. Not a big one, because I don't know. I started buying the Steam games before I even bought this gaming laptop, because the sales, some of the sales are just ridiculously low. And like I always say, even for consoles, like if a game is priced at like, $2 on a sale, and I want to play it, like, I'll grab it digitally for that cheap. But if it's something I really, really, really like, then I'll grab a physical later or something. But it's typically that, I don't buy many digital games at all. I just don't buy that many.
As far as like, if you're into like, I think the other big reason is if you're into preserving or wanting to play old games, it's existed on PC forever when it comes to both legal and illegal emulation. is just rampant and very easy. Obviously, you need a good ROM of the game. You need a decent emulator, but emulation of like every console of most games has been, you know, existed on PC for so long. So it's like, if you can't get the game, it's like, well, yeah, but get a controller, figure out a control scheme, download an emulator, get the ROM, and you can essentially play whatever game you want. It's kind of like the workaround. So it might be all digital, but there are places out there that care about preserving games. You might not physically own the original version of the game, but you can more or less find a way to play said version of it. Might not be the most ideal way, but you can still pull. There are ways to play games just because, you know, it's out there. You're never going to, you know, get rid of when it comes to video game piracy.
Right. Yep. I mean, yep. I sent to you. So I did a video quite a while ago of the 3DO ODE optical drive emulator. So Pixel made this ODE that's external. Normally an ODE has to be kind of built into the system. Typically you're taking out the disk drive and replacing it with something that will play an SD card and be able to run with the system so that you're playing on original hardware. Well, I did a review on this, and it's amazing. It's such a good device. And like, you know, optical drive emulators are still emulators. A lot of these are open source. They get firmware updates, but it's emulation that's more along the lines of FPGA, like playing the game, how it actually plays on the disc. Like with the ODE for the 3DO, I have not noticed a single thing personally that I could tell the difference with playing straight from the disc. It does such a good job, and it's one of the few external ones out there. It's so cool. Most of them you have to, you know, take out that disc drive, completely remove it from your system to be able to put that in. But this one's totally an external unit, and it only works because the Magnavox 3DO has a serial port adapter on the back. So this genius was like, oh, we can plug this in. The serial port drive is able to read everything because it was used for the memory unit. Like you could buy an extended memory unit, kind of like, you know, buying a hard drive. So like that, it's just phenomenal. But I sent to you the PCFX ODE that he made. Did you see that?
I did.
Yeah, so that is really cool. So I was telling you that there was an option for that. I just thought that was really awesome. So like if you you do end up grabbing that at some point, like that's a pretty viable option. I mean, it's not cheap, but when in comparison, like you look to all the games that you would probably want to grab for it, you can throw every single game on this plus homebrew, plus homebrews and beta builds of the games and pretty much everything, right? And I heard a rumor that there are some like anime that can be played on the PCFX ODE, like there's that have actually been made. So it's like really interesting that that's the case, because like it's, you know, notorious for the anime visual novels, but there are, I think I sent you one or two. You know, there's quite a few like good games on the system too. But what's great about this is, you know, we talked about this was on the PCFX was only released in Japan. Well, there's a ton of English translations that you can throw on this to play those games. Tons. Like there's a, you know, a community of people that have wanted to get all of these translated because they were never brought here. So that is so cool that people do that. You know, more power to them. I unfortunately would never have the time. Maybe, you know, years ago if I new Japanese, I could do so. I'm sure that there are like AI. Oh, I just moved my monitor. Sorry, audio listeners. I'm sure that there are like potentially like AI things that could assist now with this sort of thing, which would be really cool. And they can just go in and fix what maybe the AI made sound weird or didn't translate completely correctly. But I never thought about that actually. That's a pretty you know, it can be a cool assistant tool if used correctly.
Yeah, so, it can.
But this is a PCFX ODE. You can order that on 3DO.dev. Shout out to Fixel on that one.
Question. I know you're into fighting games. Have you played Tekken 8 at all?
Man, I haven't yet. I am waiting on a sale. So I have been wanting to play. Normally, I would buy these day one, but I've had to, unfortunately, just be very selective of what I can buy on day one. I love Street Fighter. I love Mortal Kombat. I went to Walmart on Street Fighter 6 to $30. It was sold out. Must have been like 10 copies of it. So somebody bought probably, I'm imagining that somebody bought all of them up. Here's why. I look over in the other cases. I've been wanting to buy I don't know where it's at. I bought it at launch of the PS5. I bought all the accessories. I've had every PS5 accessory, like official accessory, except the new Pulse headset. Unfortunately, my Pulse headset, that's what I used on the podcast before. Now I'm using this cheap headset. I used the PlayStation one for the longest time on the podcast, as you know, and the rubber has just ripped so much where it's completely off and just hanging on the inside. So all you see is the foam, so I can't use it anymore. But I saw that they marked down the media remotes, but just my Walmart, at least. I don't know if this was, I'm assuming it's probably wasn't everywhere, because I see people post deals in groups all the time that my Walmart doesn't have. They marked them down to $15. And I know before that they had at least 10 of them sitting in there. They were all gone. I would have, even though I know I have one, I have no idea where it's at for that price. I'll be straight up. I probably would have bought all of them too. And maybe
sold them for like $40 or something like that.
But I did. Yeah. So they also had, and there was two there, and the same deal. There was a lot of them. The HD, the cameras, because I've got one on my TV over here right now. I leave it on there at all times. I've used it maybe 5, like early on. And yeah. Anyway, those were marked down to 25, and they sell pretty regularly for like $45. I think they're $60 MSRP. So like I was looking at sold listings, and I was seeing them sell around like $45 or so or whatever. And I think that might have been used, so maybe around like 50 new, I don't know, on the secondhand market. But I saw them for 25 and I did not grab them, and I'm wondering if I should go back and grab them or if they'd even be there. But anyway, that went on to the topic of Tekken 8 and onto a long tangent. I have not gotten to play it yet, and I am waiting on a sale. I've just had to make the decision with some games to wait on sale. I really want to play it though. Why do you ask?
So I brought that up because apparently on Saturday, yesterday,
a new character,
director of it, Katsuhiro Harada, if that's how you say his name properly, responded to some people tweeting at him, asking them, hey, can you get a Waffle House stage in this game? Apparently enough people tweet at him. So he's like, this is from his tweets. He's like, okay, I will only ask about this request. Why do some communities send me requests for Waffle House? It's pretty much like asking why you want a stage like this in the game. And this definitely feels like it's a U.S. I kind of think Waffle House is only in the U.S. specific community. It's like they just see a Waffle House in the background. It's like, this is the perfect stage for people to fight in, because
I can tell you why.
You go to Waffle House when you're drunk or when you're got hungover, you're trying to eat it. Seems like a trashy fast food place.
I could tell you exactly why, because I don't know if you remember this incident, but a employee attacked a person over the counter there and they got in a fight. That's why it was like national news,
because he jumped over the counter. One of the customers like threw a chair at somebody and she just like grabbed it out of the air and just threw it down.
I can see why. And then another thing that Waffle House is pretty notorious for, there's a video of a hardcore band playing there. So Waffle House is pretty notorious for bands wanting to play there. Like, it's like a thing in like the music community. And recently, I cannot remember what big band. It was either Sum 41 or Blink 182. I think it was Blink 182, but one of them played at a Waffle House and recorded it, and you can watch it on YouTube. I cannot remember who, but yeah, Waffle House is notorious for people going after shows, especially in like the hardcore community. It's like a thing. Like, you go there at hardcore. If you go to a hardcore show, you know, they're brutal. If you get near the stage, expect to get hit in the face, have a broken nose. It's a brutal community. It's a great community, but like hardcore shows, you know, they do the flip kicks and side kicks and everything. It's like a whole thing. So this is hilarious, and I am on board.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I would play it.
He has like over 100,000 likes on his tweet, which is crazy. It's crazy, but for those of you who've never been to a Waffle House, you definitely need to go. Go there like 2 a.m. as you're coming home from like the bar or the club, and you need like some greasy food where the cook's like smoking over top of like.
I was just saying, yeah, they're always like
atmosphere, the taste.
They're always always whether they're outside or something, whatever. You always see somebody smoking. So yeah. I'm on board.
You're wrong there. It's great food. I love eating there.
I will say, I don't know why, I can't say why. So this is obviously a pre-recorded episode, but Billy the Hatcher, and I think I see why now. I don't know if this is reference to something happening, but Billy the Hatcher is trending on Twitter, X. Sega basically just put out a picture saying Happy Easter with Billy the Hatcher. The reason I think that this is trending is because they've done nothing else with Billy the Hatcher. It's a very cult classic game. It's a great game. I had it. I got it as a kid on the GameCube, and it's a really, really fun Sega game. It's one that Sega has never really done anything else with. So the fact they chose with Billy the Hatcher versus, doing like a Sonic thing, it's pretty funny. But it looks like they did on March 27th do a Sonic post with the plush that says, Happy Cherry Blossom Day. So obviously in Japan, that's kind of cool. But that is trending on Twitter. And of course, it's pre-recorded. So by the time that you're listening to this, that won't be the case. But I do see, I'm not sure why, maybe you do, but I also see Anthem and Suicide Squad trending as well. So I'm not sure on that. Crazy. Anthem, what's Anthem trending for? Yeah, I guess as something in reference to somebody put out strongholds in the Suicide Squad game should have taken a leaf out of the Anthem's book. Custom zones, fresh objectives, epic bosses, and exclusive loot. I don't know. I don't know what you'd take out of the book of a game that failed.
Yeah, I have no idea. Just off the top of my head.
Yeah, I don't know either. It does look like that's one thing I can mention. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt or anything, but Game Informer's best game of all time bracket came out yesterday and has been completed. That is something they've been doing. And after 200,000 fan votes, Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time, won for best game of all time. And I cannot disagree to that. It was my favorite game of all time for many, many, many years until Breath of the Wild came out. So Ocarina of Time has taken the spot of my third favorite game of all time now, which people might get mad at me for saying that. But, you know, whatever. I love Tears of the Kingdom and Breath of the Wild. So I've got a little order there, and my top three are Zelda games. I just, you know, Ocarina of Time, have you ever played it? I kept trying to get you to play it back in the day.
But I played a little bit of it, but
you played a little with me back then. Yeah. But I don't remember your reaction. I remember you were playing it, like
it's an okay game, but it's a game that if you ask me has aged poorly. Just that, being a N64 game, the scheme is god awful.
So Ocarina of Time 3D fixed a lot of that, and that is. I mean, it's almost on the level of being a remake. They redid everything. Everything is redone. Like, it is the best way to play. Anytime that I go back to play it, it's that. It looks great. You can turn the 3D off. You don't have to play it 3D. It does give some depth to the game, but they redid all the visuals. I mean, completely redid everything. Like, Link even, like, slightly looks different. Like, that's how much they did to the game. It's actually shocking. You've talked about, you know, the Zelda franchise for a while. For you and for me, when I play, I go back to Ocarina of Time 3D now, and it's a great way to play. Notoriously being the best way to play. I haven't heard anybody ever say that it's not the best way to play. They fix a lot. a lot of issues that the original had, which I think the original is amazing. But it's more streamlined. And it's just great. It's great. The visuals are great, especially for being on 3DS. And yeah, I can't recommend it enough. Ocarina of Time just has such a massive story to it. Like, you know, most Zelda games have a story, but as you know, with Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, story is kind of taken a sidestep to the gameplay and the actual, you know, the world. The story is there, but kind of dig for some of it. Like, you have to get the memories if you want to, like, see everything that's happened and what's going on. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Like, you have to collect those. I think they're called memories, right? In Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, which is not my favorite type of gameplay, personally. Yeah. I kind of wish they went away from it, but...
Yeah, it's not my favorite.
It's not terrible.
But did a lot right and, like, really innovated for the series. And, like, every open world game is trying to take a cue from Breath of the Wild at this point. Like, when we got a bunch of clones, like, we got the Phoenix... What's it called? That Ubisoft game. I can't remember. That's, like, identical to Breath of the Wild. And then that big game that people still play, that's, like, an anime... style game that's free to play.
You think you're talking
Genshin Impact took a cue.
That's a game all its own at this point, though.
It is at this point, but at the beginning when it launched, like, oh, this is a Breath of the Wild clone. If you want more Breath of the Wild, play this. That's how it was at the beginning. Yeah. And that's why I played it. And I played like 5 hours of it and I was like, yeah, this isn't really Breath of the Wild for me. And like, I get it. I totally get why people like that game, but it's just not for me. It's evolved into its own thing way past being a Breath of the Wild clone at this point, but it does take a lot of cues from the game. And a lot of open world games do now. Like, they want to kind of mimic the Breath of the Wild sort of style of open world, because open world, you know, it's been around for a while, but that really, I mean, it really just did open world right. Like, I love it. I love that open world in those games, especially Tears of the Kingdom. I think, you know, with the added stuff to Tears of the Kingdom as far as the abilities, there's so much to do in that game, man. There's just so much that you can do. I see people that literally just play the game to build, which is not something I'm good at. I can't build worth a crap in the game. Like, You find those areas where you can build and it has the stuff there for you, and I can never build anything right to use. So I finally got the thing. I'm still playing. I haven't finished it yet. I am playing through as I can with all these other game releases, and I said I'm going to take my time with this game and enjoy it. So I do. That's what I do. I take my time with it. I could have, with the amount of hours I have into it, I could have beat the story a long time ago. I started the game and I was just exploring and having fun with it. I didn't just go straight through the story. To me, a game like that I was, you know, so excited for and had been looking forward to for so many years, I was like, I'm going to take my time with this because I want to do everything except all the Korok seeds. Like, yeah, I want to do all the deaths, everything with the sky. I have made my way through a lot of the deaths, even though... still at, like, I think I'm at like 140 hours into it. There's still points of the depths that I can't take on because I'm not strong enough. I haven't gotten enough through the story. I think I've completed two of the bosses. I stopped. I streamed it. The last time I played it, I defeated that fire boss. I can't remember his name. But yeah, I defeated the fire boss. Stream
crazy.
Took me about 16 tries, but I did it. it was a good time for people watching the stream, though. They really enjoyed it.
Definitely. Do you remember the old Blades dashboard on Xbox on the 360?
I sure do.
I got an Xbox 360 at the end of its life, so I never saw this, but there was a pretty both sad and humorous. So it was apparently a few days as of Sunday, 2 days ago when we're recording this, it was posted on Reddit apparently that somebody managed to snag a Xbox 360 Arcade Edition boxed open, but still factory sealed that for, I think it was like £175. It's about a little over $200 USD. with that UI, and then they immediately accidentally connected it online, it updated, and the dashboard went away.
Oh, no. Why would you do that? God, why would you do that with a brand new 360? Oh, so, yeah, man, so apparently that's a big mistake.
So apparently they put in Halo Reach and were given a prompt for an update, and they just, without thinking, hit yes, and it just updated the whole UI, the whole software, everything.
Man, the goals for some people is to get a 360. It's never been connected up. It's hard to find. I mean, everybody connect you.
Yeah.
Yeah, every game wanted you to. You really have to find one
that was never hooked up, essentially almost like brand new pretty much at this point.
You basically have to find somebody that's Amish, because that's the only person that wouldn't have connected it to the internet.
But I saw that, like, I never dealt with it, but oh, that's rough. Can you talk about an old 360 at that point? And then just a simple mistake, and then, like, I was looking around a little bit, and most people just, you know, because it's something old, you can't have it anymore, so, like, if you can find it, that's great, and then at that point, you just have to not hook it up to the internet.
Yeah.
Or else, you know, you don't want to risk it going away, because I guess that's why you would have it in the first place.
Yeah. People specifically go after 360, try to find 360s that have never been connected. So, like, there have been, you know, like eBay listings for ones that are used, never connected to the internet, which is very few and far between. I mean, the 360 and the PS3, if you didn't hook it up to, dude, the 360 was a multiplayer machine. That is, you know, Call of Duty, all of that. So people were connected to the internet. Like, that sucks. That sucks. So, yeah, the Blades dashboard, man, I am very nostalgic for that. I think it was so cool. I think it just looks cool. It's so different than what we have now. But yeah, that's crazy.
Also, this is less game related, but because Space Battleship Yamato is coming up on its 50th anniversary, they've got a special project that they've been working on. So they announced on Saturday that Hideki Anno will be planning and producing a 50th anniversary project for Space Battleship Yamato. The project will include several book publications as well as screening event on October 6th. Which would mark the official 50th anniversary of when the first episode aired back in 74, which is, I've watched the remake of the TV series, and I absolutely loved it. It changes a few things, but the overall plot's the same, but it's yeah, different enough to be its own. And it's at this point, it's a classic anime, Space Battleship Yamato. It takes the old World War II battleship that is infamous for just being the largest battleship ever built, and then they turn it into we're just going to throw a ship that looks like it should be in the sea into space. And then it became a really well-known space opera, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's glad to see, you know, some of these older shows when they get, you know, they start hitting like huge milestones and stuff.
But, yeah. I mean, like Akira, for instance, when it hit its, it might've been the 30th anniversary for that, when they released a bunch of stuff on the bonus features and like things that weren't in the film that were going to be in there was a lot with like Akira. That is that's an anime movie that non-anime fans have watched and enjoyed. Like, you don't have to be an anime fan whatsoever to watch Akira. That's how I feel. But did you know, because this just came out, but of course, you know, you're watching this later on or listening, ESRB rating for Silent Hill 2 Remake is out and suggests the game will have everything fans have come to know the survival horror franchise for. So this is like a pretty big deal. Did get the M rating, which is what we needed for this game. I was actually concerned that it would not get the M rating because
they just wanted to sell it more.
Yeah, I was concerned that was what was going to happen. But the M rating is for blood, violence, and sexual themes that are expected for the horror franchise, which is all stuff that like should be in it. I am very hesitant on this game. Mark, I don't know if you saw when I want to say this was during the PlayStation Direct that we talked about. I'm trying to remember what PlayStation calls it. I think
their State of the Union they do.
They showed off this, and then
I think they call it the State of Play.
State of Play. Yeah, I I covered it live. I don't know why I forgot. But anyway, they showed this and it looked horrible. It visually looked like it could have been like a PS3 game. And like visuals don't mean everything to me, but also the combat looked really bad. Like and so Konami is not developing this in-house, which is concerning. I am this game. I hope that this is not released until at least late 2025, because it looked like it needed a lot of work. And I'm not the only one that said that. There's videos out there and stuff where people have talked about that. There's just so much that did not look right with the game. It looked like it was almost like, why are you showing this game? Because it looks like you're midway through development. Like I feel like it was to a level to be showed off. My other concern is that during that, they dropped a free game that you can download called The Short Message, I believe. And I think it's like a 4 to 5 hour game. I think I beat it in like 4 hours. I spent with it, maybe a little bit more, but it was really bad. It was really, really bad. And it was meant to be essentially like the Notorious, I cannot remember the name of the game that was free, PT. So PT was a demo that is no longer available. And if it's on your system sells for a lot of money. It was a demo that was made that was kind of like the perfect Silent Hill, if you will. It was like the perfect. It just was amazing. Like if you look up PT demo, like it was just absolutely amazing. And they took it down pretty quickly. And which was unfortunate, but basically Konami was trying to make that because like that was a demo. So it was obviously super short, but it showed something that could have been amazing. And PT was basically Silent Hill. It was a Kojima project. So that was trying to be PT because it was really short and it was free. Like that was their attempt basically to be that. It was not good. It was really bad, very disappointing. And that dropped for free during that state of play when they also showed Silent Hill 2. So my hope is that they spend a lot more time with this game, that they don't plan to drop it this year, because it definitely looked like it was still being baked and was not ready. And I cannot remember if we actually got like an expected release date. I felt like we did have an expected release date for this year, but have since heard nothing else. And like I said, my hope is, because I want this to be the best it can be, right? This is Silent Hill. Silent Hill games are very expensive. Silent Hill 2 is, I don't know at the time. I just know prices have fluctuated, but it's around like $400, somewhere around there. Silent Hill games are very expensive. There are other Silent Hill games that are more expensive than that. My hope is that they do this right, and the Resident Evil remakes that they did for 2 and 3, 2 especially was amazing. They did it right. They took all the horror elements of 2, very scary games. You're going door to door. You don't know what's going to happen. You got dogs jumping through the window that, when that happened to me and the dog, I was playing, I think it was Resident Evil 0 on the GameCube, and dogs jumped through the window. And oh my God, I think I screamed playing it in the dark. It scared the crap out of me. They were scary games, man, especially for the time. They were real horror games. But basically Resident Evil 2 and 3, people debate on 3 being like a great game, cause they excluded a lot of the elements of 3, and also it's a short game, much shorter than 2. But it, in my opinion, isn't a bad game. It's still a good remake, but they cut down a lot of content, a lot that happens in 3, and it was just too short. But they did it right in improving that combat. Do you remember the Resident Evil, like the tank controls? Do you remember that? It was like a thing for a lot of other games too.
Yeah.
But especially horror games, and really Resident Evil is like the notorious example for tank control. So like, it's like hard to, it's very hard to get back to, very hard to control your character. You literally move around like a tank. That's why it's called tank controls. Like that's how you, so they did modern movement, modern combat, but kept the horror elements and kept the story sort of intact, but did some different stuff to make it worth being a remake. And then gave added content later. And like they did stuff right with that. So my hope is that they do it with this, because Silent Hill needs it. We haven't gotten anything from series in a long time besides that short message. But before that, I think the last thing was PT. I could be wrong, but we got the Silent Hill game on the Vita. I think about this before, but it's like an over the head Diablo, RuneScape, that sort of, it's like it's over the head. It's not even silent. I don't know why they even call it Silent Hill. It's terrible. And it was an expensive game, like $100 game. If the name is Silent Hill, it's expensive. The only one I could think that's a Book of Memories. I actually played through the whole game too, but it's a dungeon crawling game. So that was the word I was looking for. But it was like one of those over the head sort of things where you walk through the doors and clear the next room or whatever, and gather, you know, get gold and things like that. But I don't know if that was actually like the last game or ET, but yeah, we haven't gotten anything in a very long time. So it's a very beloved franchise, and my hope is that they do it right, basically.
That's always the hope, though, at the end of the day.
It's Konami. I've lost so much respect for Konami. They hold so many franchises I love. New Contra came out, but I played the demo and I discussed it, and it was really bad on the Switch. And Nintendo is the platform you think of for Contra. Like, that is just how it is. I've heard other people say this too. They're like, if it's Contra, I want to play it on a Nintendo system. There have been Contra games on other systems that weren't on a Nintendo platform, but not many. But there definitely has been. But Konami, they got into the pachinko game. That's what they have been known for the last,
which is gambling. Essentially.
Yeah,
that's the Japanese version of a slot machine.
Yeah, that they make pachinko machines, and that is like their thing, and that is their income. So Konami has not been relevant for a while, which is unfortunate, because, like I said, they hold so many great franchises. One of the biggest being Castlevania, that they've done very little with. We got the collections that came out, which are amazing, but it's of no work really from them, other than them holding the rights and publishing. So yeah, I really, really hope that they do this right. I have no faith in Konami anymore. It's unfortunate, because they were such a massive company. They hold so many iconic franchises. I mean, stuff like Frogger and Metal Gear Solid, and, you know, like some classic stuff going, you know, way, way back. But yeah, I hope that they do this right. I really do. It deserves it. The fans deserve it. I deserve it. So yeah, we'll see on the Silent Hill. But it did get that M rating, so there's some hope for that. Works out.
Oh, because everything's a little bit weird this week. Did you have like something pre-selected for like a game you wanted to talk about, or did you have anything prepped for that?
Well, yeah, kinda. So I had something in thought, and it's not just one game. It is the Rebirth series that was on WiiWare. So basically they released some makes, but basically like the Rebirth series. So there was Castlevania, and these were WiiWare only titles that have never been re-released. And these are phenomenal games. So you've got Contra Rebirth, and I bought all these back then. This was during the time. So when these came out, this was around the time of the official Nintendo Forums Insider had closed down at that point. And I remember being on Insider 2. So this was like a big deal. Everybody was discussing this, and still to this day, people think that the Castlevania, the Adventure Rebirth is one of the best Castlevania games ever. But this Rebirth series is just such a all three of these games are absolutely phenomenal. They're remakes. They're remakes that are done right and of classics. So the Contra Rebirth is really, really cool too. I mean, they completely redid Contra from the ground up, and it's weird because they did it only for WiiWare, which is fine. But the problem is that WiiWare is inaccessible now. You know, there are ways to mod your Wii and and stuff like that and to emulate it. But physically, this has still been stuck on WiiWare and has never been re-released. But if you look up these games, I mean, you can see straight up this complete remakes. And they're notorious for being very good. The people that know, they know. Like the Castlevania the Adventure is a Game Boy remake. This game was on, and I will say, because I had one and two back in the day, I was Castlevania the Adventure today is dang near unplayable. It is playable, but it's very rough, right? This was a big deal that they remade this, because this was a Game Boy game where, like, they made a sequel to Castlevania the Adventure. And it improved a lot of stuff, but it was still on the Game Boy, so it was pretty limited. But it's a good game. But this, they just completely redid from the ground up, Game Boy game. If you played this, you wouldn't know that it was a Game Boy game. And it's just phenomenal game. But my hope is that there's three of these. There's Gradius 2, which I have not mentioned, Gradius Rebirth. Also done from the ground up. Gradius is a notorious series as well. I had some of them back in the day. I did not play the original when I was a kid, but I did get, I can't remember the first one I played, but the one that sticks in my head that I had and played all the time was Gradius Galaxies on the GBA. I don't know. Do you know about this game?
I don't.
Okay. So this game is one I am on a mission collecting wise. I very much like cut back on things. Like, I look for deals, and if I'm very selective on what I buy. But this was a game that my grandma had got me, and I had played a couple of the Gradius games before this. This game blew me away for being a shmup. It's a side-scrolling shooter. You could expect from a side-scrolling shooter, but it was just done right. It felt right. It was such a good game. It is a very expensive game now. I was shocked when I had looked it up. I can't remember exact eBay prices, but I was looking up and saved things from my childhood that meant something to me and that I had, like, you know, fond memories of. Not just buying everything like that. I'm not even talking about just video games. Like, there is a, I have looked at every convention I went to last year, and I went to a lot. When I went to Final Boss Con last year, there was a vendor, and I swear, because I looked and was checking the catalog, they had every single Batman the Animated Series figures except the one I was looking for. Except
That's rough.
And it's a silly one, right? It was one that was used in like one episode. You know how they did that, right? Back in the day, like, and they still do that now. Like, the adult collectible market, like, they still do that with those adult collectible items. But it was the Anti-Freeze Batman, I believe, was that the actual name for it. I want to say it was like Anti-Freeze. But basically, it was a white. He had a white suit with, I think, black lines through it. And that's it. I mean, it was very simple. It came with like a little attachment, and I got it pulled up here now. It came with like a sort of, looks like a glider attachment, but it was, Anti-Freeze Batman is what it's called. And I've been looking for this. My grandma got me this, and I have a hilarious story about it. My family still talks about it to this day. I flushed it down the toilet and clogged the toilet probably about 30 times with this figure. It kept going through the toilet, and I hung on to this figure for a long time. And unfortunately, with a life event that happened, I won't really get into, I lost a bunch of stuff. Unfortunately, I got a bunch of stuff I never got back. But this figure means so much to me, and that's all I can think about is being flushed down the toilet. Like, I did it so many times. My grandma was so angry at me. It was at her house I did it. That's where I did it every single time. I was at my grandma's all the time, and I clogged her toilet so many times. Oh my gosh, they still talk about it. But this Rebirth series, getting on another tangent, the Rebirth series, what I would love to see is that, like, limited run games or strictly limited, or one of them does like a 3-pack and is able to get the rights to do this from Konami, because Konami is doing stuff like this now. They've got the Castlevania Advance Collection, They've got the other Castlevania collection that has Symphony of the Night and, oh gosh, I can't remember what the other one is called off the top of my head. I have it too. Very, very difficult game. It took me a long time to beat, but it's the anniversary. Oh no, this is separate. Sorry. The anniversary collection has a bunch of the original games. It has Castlevania, Simon's Quest, Dracula's Curse 4, The Adventure, which is the Game Boy game I just talked about. Castlevania 2, Belmont's Revenge, which is the sequel to what I was just talking about. That's the one that did a little bit better with the mechanics. Bloodlines, yeah. And Kid Dracula, which, crazily enough, is one of my favorite in the series. It's a spinoff game that's like a chibi version of Castlevania. Of Dracula, that's meant to be like a sort of origin story that was released on the Famicom. If you looked it up, you would just think Japan instantly. It's just,
yeah,
it's very Japanese. It's chibi and it's a lot of fun. But my hope is that they do like a 3-pack for this, because Konami is now working with a lot of these companies to release these collections. Like I said, they got the Advanced Collection, they got this Anniversary Collection, and then the one that has Symphony of the Night, and I cannot remember the other one off the top of my head, but I would love to see that happen. So that's kind of my shout out for the week. So if you're interested, just look up the Rebirth series. You'll see the three that I'm talking about. The Castlevania is a standout, but the other two are great too. So.
Yeah, I know you're talking about that Gradius game as well.
Yeah.
I pulled some up about 2 years ago under someone posted under the Retro Gaming, just pulled up where they had like posted like they had all the Gradius games. So there were two NES games, the SNES. Yeah. There's two for the Game Boy Color, one, or just the regular Game Boy, my bad. One for the Game Boy Advance, the two PlayStation 2 games, and then two of the Japanese Famicom versions of the game, which is really, really niche. You feel like at this point, a series that nobody would know about, since what, the newest game was a PS2 game?
Yeah, yeah, which was entirely different too. So I had that. So you mentioned the Game Boy. I don't remember which one, but I had one on the Game Boy. I played one on the Super Nintendo. And I think those were probably the only two that I played before I got Galaxies. Were there others on the GBA?
I can't read it in this picture, but there are two Game Boy games and then one Game Boy Advance game.
Okay, so just Galaxy. So I was looking on here to confirm. This is ridiculous. So I pulled up Gradius Galaxies, and I'm like, all right, let's check this out. $70 for box manual only. Here is a near mint, complete copy. It's not even sealed, but, near mint, $288. You can get a loose copy for around $35 to $40 plus shipping is what I'm seeing. I'm seeing an average of like $35, for a loose GBA game. I mean, it's not the worst. There are ones that are way more expensive, but for me, it's like, if it's a game like this, especially with the EverDrive, right? Like, I've got the EverDrive, so I can play it now. So the games that I want it complete. Yeah. If it's one that has I only care about the ones that have a meaning to me that I had during my childhood and really loved and enjoyed. And I played this game a lot, like a lot. And you had to start from the beginning every single time and, you know, work your way. And I finally beat it. I remember being really, you know, stoked that I finally beat the game. And you remember games like that, right? That you just constantly play it over months and months and months. And finally you beat the game. Yeah.
You'd be stuck on like one boss for like 2-3 months straight. You just couldn't beat him. And you get frustrated. Like, yeah. I'm going to stop playing this game now.
It took me around 6 months to beat Ocarina of Time on the 64 the first time, because I was stuck on the Water Temple for so long. I cannot get through the Water Temple.
Everybody talks about it's that infamous water.
I was very young playing that.
Where it's like, now as an adult, you're like, I kind of know what I'm doing. You can pick up on the mechanics really quickly. It's like, all right, it might be frustrating, but I could get through this. As a kid, you're just like, I don't know what I'm doing wrong.
So, all right, here's the topic to bring up. I hate water levels in any game that I've ever played. I can only think of like one example that I like water levels, and that's Donkey Kong Country, because you have the what are the fish called with the long I can't remember what the fish are called.
That
the long spike. You get to ride. You get to ride them, and it feels good in that game. But just about any Mario water levels, oh my god.
You said that because you thought that was like, that's like the only game I actually liked the water levels on was Super Mario Bros. 3. Like, I liked, I did not. Maybe because it was the only levels that were kind of.
Well, if you had the frog suit, I guess the frog suit made it not so bad.
But even without the frog suit, they were a struggle, but they were like iconic to me.
Not to me. I hated water. They are iconic, but
I also really like the music on those levels as well.
Dude, oh my god. The music though, yes. No, listen, look, when you get time, and for listeners, please listen to the Donkey Kong Country 3 soundtrack. The water levels, they made such a beautiful. Oh my god, the music in that game is just insane, and the music for all three is great. And like people, like three is by no means bad, and it's actually, believe it or not, my favorite. Most people say it's like the lesser of the three because it's Dixie Kong, but I think it's my favorite. There is a little nostalgia in that, but I still have played through all three again, you know, many times, many, many times. And as an adult, it's a game, you can beat in an hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever, a couple hours. Yeah. Dixie's Conquest. It's my favorite of the three, but the music, oh my god, the water level music, man, holy crap. Like, it's one you could jam on the car. It's like that. What you're making a kid's game? Like, what? This music is so good. You outdid yourselves.
Did not have to go this hard.
You didn't. That's what I'm saying. It went hard, man. Like, I don't know if I know some of these companies that put out this music vinyls. There's this one called Pixel. I can't remember the name. A name that specifically puts it out. There are some companies. I don't know if there are any Nintendo ones though, because I'm not sure if Nintendo's ever licensed for vinyl. I'm not sure if there's any like that are like officially licensed. And like obviously it would be very hard to do with Nintendo to do like unlicensed one. I'm sure that there are some that were like sold on a small scale. My God, I would buy that on vinyl, and I don't buy vinyl anymore. I got very addicted. I know like the Mario Brothers movie has a vinyl, but that's like the only one I'm aware of for like an actual Nintendo property. I'm sure they might be out there, but like I said, I'm not aware of them. But the Mario Brothers movie soundtrack is also a banger, and that is on vinyl. I very much contemplated buying it. I didn't though. If they had Donkey Kong Country 3 on vinyl, I'd be all over that. There are so many cool games that have gotten vinyls, and it's like a whole thing. Okay, so like I'm looking right here. This is cool. Now, Nintendo doesn't have to have anything to do with this, but Johto Legends from Pokemon Gold and Silver, there's a 2 LP vinyl set for $42. And it looks beautiful. Like the vinyls are like Pokeballs. It's really cool. This is IM8-bit.
Oh, I was able to pull it up. It looks dope.
Yeah. Yeah. That is so cool. And of course, from my favorite generation, I absolutely love it. That is
looks
so
like the
cool.
Actual cover. Something like has like a map of the region and like that in old Japanese style. It looks dope.
Yeah. That is really cool.
Pulled it up on the IM8bit.com site. Yeah. They were selling it for like $40, $43, something like that.
I feel like that's a pretty fair price. Vinyl was there's a large community for vinyl collectors. See, like there's a few that there's like a few things that would really, really want to make me buy a vinyl for, like that I just absolutely love. I know Mega Man has gotten vinyl, and those I really regret not buying some of the Mega Man Battle Network vinyl, because there's 6 Battle Network games, I believe. I guess if you count the spinoffs, I think there might be 7. I could be wrong on that. I think because there's a Japanese it never came over here, where it's a Battle Network and Star Force crossover. So Battle Network, and they're set, you know, hundreds of years apart. I think 100 years apart. And it's game with both of them in it. It's a Battle Network Star Force crossover. Anyway, I know that a lot of the Manga Band games have gotten vinyl, and like I'm looking here on the IM 8-bit website, and man, they've got some like for things that you wouldn't think would ever get a vinyl, like Turnip Boy Commits Tax Evasion, which is a very underrated game, by the way. Super fun indie game. It got a sequel. I have it downloaded from Game Pass. I need to play it because eventually it'll get removed. But yeah, really, really cool. There's so many, man. What's a franchise? I know Metroid for you, but is there any other franchises, anything, any pop culture where like it would make you buy a vinyl? Because I know you're not like a vinyl collector, but is there?
I don't know.
There's a Conker's Bad Fur Day vinyl on here that looks amazing. Oh my gosh. That is so cool. Yeah, very cool. It looks beautiful. Like the cover. The cover they made for it. Oh my gosh. So cool, man. I love Conker's Bad Fur. That is really cool. And that's a 2LP as well. You know, the more LPs, the better, because you have less compression on the music. So the more vinyl it comes with, the better. That is really, really cool, man. I can see why.
Definitely.
But is there any franchise? I'm sorry. I was asking you, is there any franchise for you that you think of?
I was thinking there was one, and I...
Ooh, only one.
I just try to pull it up and see if I can actually find one out there.
What about like the
because there was one official Tenchi Muyu vinyl that was put out called Midwinter Summer Festival. Ooh. But I can't even find it right now, even on eBay or something like that. I know it exists, but I don't know how common it actually is.
Well, if you can't find it, it's probably not common at all, right?
I can find the CD for it, but not the vinyl.
And you're positive it got a vinyl?
We'll actually play it and stuff like that and talk about it. Actually, you say that. It's
pulled it right up. Yeah, I was going to ask you, would you buy a vinyl for that?
I would probably look into it. I mean, to be fair, I could find most of those songs without a vinyl because like half the music they use are old military songs and marchings and stuff like that.
You can find any song without a vinyl. The whole thing with vinyl is that it's an analog sound. So it's not, you know, you can't listen to analog on your computer. I don't know how much experience you have with vinyl. It's an amazing format for music.
Not a lot.
It's my favorite, but if you get into it, like I told you before, and I talked about it many times, but like I collected every form of media at one point. So, I mean, I was collecting books, I was collecting manga, I was collecting CDs, all forms of music. I was collecting, 8-tracks. I was, you know, everything. I was collecting cassettes, movies in every format, from VHS to the HD DVD, to Betamax. And, you know, I collected every form of media, everything. Cause I love it all. I legitimately love stuff from every form of media, and I do enjoy like throwing a Betamax in there. It is like a special experience. Like Laserdisc is another one that I absolutely love, and I was collecting that hardcore. Unfortunately, the thing with that is that it's very prone to disc rot, and it's scary when you're. They're a lot of money. They're a lot of money now. They're very sought after. A lot of cinephiles, you know. Movie maniacs favorite format, you know, and VHS is the big one now, but like Laserdisc has a very strong community, and a lot of people prefer Laserdiscs over like DVDs. It is like a very special format, and there are anime that got released on Laserdisc, believe it or not.
Oh yeah, there's a bunch of them. Yeah,
and they go for a lot of money. But also, speaking of Laserdisc, one of my holy grails is the Laser Active. Are you aware of this system?
I am not.
So, this system is a Laserdisc player / it plays its own exclusive games. It has Laserdisc games / it actually has bots for cartridges, for gaming systems that are in the form of like a little inserted cartridge. So you put the cartridge into the Laser Active, and there's a Sega Genesis, TurboGrafx, and then there's a karaoke module that you can buy for this. And
of course there is.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, look, this and it, I have been looking, I'll put it this way, very long time. And, you know, I started collecting when I was a kid. And yeah. I have been, when I learned about this system, which I want to say is probably like, I would say for about 10 years, I have actively been looking for this system. There's a guy on Facebook, I'm friends with him, and he's in a lot of, he's notorious in a lot of Facebook groups, especially for like the PCFX and TurboGrafx and stuff like that, right? Like he repairs those and mods them and does stuff like that. So a lot of people know him and go to him. He's got like 50 of these just sitting. Here's the thing people are doing, and they're doing it the right way, and I have not done it. I need to do it. There are these websites where you can order or where you can buy from like Yahoo Japanese auctions. People are using them very actively. And basically you can work through a third party to like gather the stuff that you buy and ship it to you. And like they're buying this stuff like dirt cheap from Japan, like dirt cheap.
Yeah.
And then shipping it all in one go. So like they'll collect this stuff to like a warehouse, like this third party shipper. And get it all together and then ship it out to you when you're ready. Like you can get it when you're ready. But yeah, like the Japanese Yahoo auctions are very prevalent. And I know people are getting just like stellar deals. I don't know enough. I guess I should do some research. But like a lot of these holy grails for me, I see people get for like pretty cheap. Like, and you know, when you're talking about something like this, like dirt cheap for this would be like, I would beg to say that $300 is dirt cheap for this thing because it goes well over $1,000. And the modules are, you know, like very expensive themselves, especially the TurboGrafx module. As you are aware, the TurboGrafx already is a very expensive game. So this is a very rare and sought after way to play the TurboGrafx. And often, I hear people say this is the best way and in a retro way to play the TurboGrafx, but like the controller for it is super expensive. And, you know, I think the karaoke module is it may be the cheapest thing for it they can get, but it's still not cheap. Like it's still sought after. But this laser active is just, it's so cool. Pioneer put it out and they're called PAX, PAC is what they're called. But they're modules that you insert, and there's a Mega Drive one / Sega Genesis. Obviously, there is the NEC TurboGrafx / PC Engine. There is the karaoke one that has two microphone inputs on it. The retail price for it at the time was $350. But then there's also, which this is one I learned about just a few years ago, there is a computer interface pack for it that turns this into like a home computer. And it's at the end of the day, it's a Laserdisc player. And this turns it into a home computer. So it introduced a computer program called the Laser Active Program Editor on a floppy disk for DOS and classic Mac OS. The floppy disks had some sample programs created with the editor for use with the first five laser discs in the Tenchi Muyo anime series, believe it or not. That's listed here on the Wikipedia. So this editor you could use to edit the first five episodes of Tenchi Muyo. Also had, this is why the system is just so crazy, it also had 3D goggles. It looks like you can employ active shutter, which is good. Active shutter is good. It's not the crappy, Scion and Blue or whatever. The actual colors were, it was compatible with the 6 Ready Laserdisc ROM software titles like 3D Museum, Badra 2, which is like, I want to say that's like an anime style game, or like anime based game or something. I think it has an anime cover at least. I don't know. Virtual Cameraman 2, Dr. Pulo no Toteki Video, one called Goku, and 3D Virtual Australia. I want to know more about this Goku from 1995. I've never heard of this. But yeah, the goggles are also compatible with the Master System and are interchangeable with the Sega Scope 3D glasses. They can also be used to view 3D images from auto stereograms. So interesting. That's another thing I've been after for a while. The SegaScope 3D glasses. I used to have it with a previous collection, but they're for the Master System. They're actually the Famicom had 3D glasses, or 3D headset with 3D games, and then the SegaScope 3D glasses, which it's like a plug into the system, and there were some 3D capable games for it, and they're actually good. It's like good 3D. For the time, especially. And yeah, cool stuff. Man, I've looked for this system for so long, like at the point where I've pretty much given up because the prices just keep going up and up and up and up, almost to where it's like at an unreachable price. So I would have to like win a Yahoo auction or something to ever get the system. Yeah. But yeah, you got to dive more into the NEC stuff, because I know we talked a ton about it. That was
definitely, yeah.
I clipped 60 seconds of that discussion from that podcast that I got to put out. But sir, what else do we got?
Have you ever heard of an anime called Mobile Fighter G Gundam?
I have, yes.
Yeah, so I mean, it's kind of a little bit rushed, but because I think this is actually one of the few. I actually have it both on DVD and on Blu-ray. Because they Funimation, you know, when they still existed, published it, you know, in two different sets of 25 and 25. It's pretty much the only time you saw a mixture of Gundam mix up with the Super Sentai type thing, where it's like robots doing like extremely exaggerated things as they go out and fight. Because the concept is, instead of it being like a more war type thing, you start dealing with the mobile suits are controlled by actual people fighting in them, doing martial arts in the robot, and yeah, the robot would mimic kind of what you do type thing, which is a really unique spin on it, as well as it stereotypes every country. So the basic concept is we've eliminated war by these, every country who has like a colony in space. Some might call it like, obviously the main characters from Neo Japan. You need Neo America, Neo Russia, and every other country in between. And for the most part, like every country's mobile suit is based off some kind of is designed in such a way it's like a stereotype of said country to some degree. And it's just super over the top.
Okay. You know, type acting. Okay.
I think the most infamous, and I don't have a way to show that, but the most infamous of what people talk about is Mexico's or Neo Mexico's mobile suit is called a Tequila Gundam.
Oh my god!
Kind of takes inspiration from like a cactus.
Oh my gosh!
But it's got the sombrero on its head and stuff like that.
That is
where
hilarious.
It definitely plays into the stereotype where like Egypt's is Pharaoh Gundam and stuff like that. And then I can't remember what country it was that their mobile suit looks like a windmill.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like one of the, maybe like Finland, like Neo Finland, or I might be getting that completely wrong. Ooh. But like the idea is it's got these stereotypes and it's essentially like a tournament type style to the fights and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's just a really, it's super strange away from like the standard mobile suit type trope and stuff like that. But it does its own thing. I think it's a kind of like a fun type thing to watch. Just, I don't want to say necessarily shut your brain off because there's still a story to
I've watched it, it's fun. I mean, it's of the time though, right? Like it's
from like the early 90s. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like it, Tequila Gundam, like that's great, cool name. Man, that's cool. Like the Gundam's drunk all the time. That's very interesting for sure.
And it's one of the earlier ones. Like I know, yeah, we kind of grew
it's
up
the
when
first
they were on
one I watched. That it was hold a, on that or was, oh god
that and Wing and, yeah Mobile Suit Gundam Wing, both yeah, kind of aired around the same time on one of those, in the early 2000s.
One of those two I watched first. Yeah, it might have been Wing that I watched first, but then I want to say the third one I watched was Unicorn. Maybe I want to say that was the third. I also watched all
out,
of SD Gundam. Yeah, no, I'm just talking about like I watched quite a few, and I've also played a lot of Gundam games. A lot of the Gundam Warriors, I think it's called, games, yeah, and There's actually been some others.
No, it's the Dynasty Warriors, because the only one that I have is from the 360, which is Dynasty Warriors. The first one.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Just a fun games,
but it's a hack and slash.
If you don't like hack and slash games, you're not gonna like them. Yeah, it's I'm pretty burnt out on them now because basically we got Zelda and then the Fire Emblem, and I'm like. And I played the Zelda. I played a Hyrule Warriors on all three systems. The original Hyrule Warriors
is such a big. It's like a long game.
Okay. Yeah, the original. Then talk about what they. So they had the original on Wii U, right?
Yeah.
Then they ported it with a bunch of extra content to the 3DS, and then they brought that version over to the Switch with the definitive edition with more content. So you talk about a game that you can play and no problem. And I can't play a game like that. I don't dislike those games. I obviously played them, and then I played Fire Emblem Warriors, and then they made the second one, which I still haven't played. I have that still sealed because I'm so burnt out on Warriors games. I'm so burnt out on them. But back then, I loved the Dynasty Warriors Gundams games. I played 1, 2, and 3. I'm not sure if they made any more than that, but I played those three, and I liked them. I liked them for what they were. People were kind of mixed on them. They're Warriors games at the end of the day. I don't remember them getting very good reviews, but I enjoyed them because I think what it was is that I just wanted something Gundam. I wanted to be able to play something Gundam, and like there wasn't very many options here. Like there was some other stuff, but there wasn't a lot. You know what I mean?
It's gotten bigger in recent years.
There's a lot of Gundam games I haven't gotten to play because there's quite a few of them. I'm trying to think what the last one was that I played. I actually have it downloaded on my PS5. Let's see. I think it came out in 2021 or 2022. And not remember what it's called. I know I've got Breaker 4, but it's not that. SD Gundam Alliance, it's not that one. I do have that, though. I cannot remember what it's called. I've got it downloaded, but I played basically just through the tutorial. And yeah.
I've got a few games, some of which are digital only, because I think I got one for free when I downloaded it. But I can't off the top of my head. It takes place during the original timeline.
Wait, so are you thinking War. Of? Is it on modern platforms?
I have it on my PS5.
Yeah, so that's what I have then too. I just can't think of the.
There's a few games in the PS5.
But it's like a multiplayer. It's like a multiplayer game.
It's just killing me. I can't think of the name.
Oh, this isn't a PS4 game. This is a PS5 game. I'm trying to. There's a lot. I'm pulling up PS5. So there's four on the PS5. Like I said, I have Battle Alliance, Breaker 4. It is Gundam. I think Gundam Evolution is the one. Pretty sure.
I think that sounds about right.
Yeah, I'm gonna look up to make sure what the.
I was trying to scroll through my PlayStation library. Okay, yeah, so the other one, I played that one. The other one I was thinking of was Mobile Suit Gundam Battle Operation Code Fairy.
Oh man,
which takes place during the original One-Year War, where there's like X amount of like episodes for it, or kind of however they did it. It's a story. It's story heavy type thing.
Is it okay? Place, so this isn't the one that's like. Multiplayer, no. Correct? Okay, so no, it's, Evolution it's, is the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah, that one is story based, where it takes place. It's a bunch of girls on the. It's not the Federation, but the Zeon side of the One-Year War from the original show.
Okay,
kind of where that takes place as story.
I would want to play that. I do recommend, though. I thoroughly enjoyed. I did not play. Any DLC or didn't get anything with the DLC, but that SD Gundam Battle Alliance is a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun, and you can find it pretty cheap if you don't care about PC. I think I saw it on there. There was a PC key somewhere. I think I saw pop up for like $12. but it is on the PS5. It is like a hacky slash game, but obviously Gundam. It isn't a Warriors game, but it's that style. Yeah. You know what I mean? It works for it. It's fun, dude. I love it. I think it's a lot of fun. to me, it's like, man, this is like a Gundam game I've like really wanted for a long time. And you might hear like the SD Gundam part and like be turned off, but it's don't have to worry about that. But it's a lot of fun, man. It's a lot of fun. Does have the SD mobile suits, but it works in the style of like an actual Gundam game. I mean, SD, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I love SD Gundam though, personally. I'm a big fan. I watched it all when it was new on Cartoon Network and really enjoyed it. Chibi, I've always been into that. I've always liked when they turn something that like shouldn't be into chibi.
Well,
like,
I think SD is supposed to, or chibi, kind of like the SD.
Super deformed.
Like super deformed. Yeah. Because it just shrinks it down to like a little plush type thing that you would buy for like $10 or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's really cool. I always liked when they do that to franchises that like shouldn't have it. But I did want to ask you, since we're on the topic of an anime based game, have you played any of the Yu Yu Hakusho games?
No.
Okay, there's one specifically because I had it for the GBA. I believe it's called Battle Tournament, I want to say. Which, yes, I had. I'm trying to remember here. Yeah.
It gave me the Dark Tournament, which is just the arc.
I can't remember what the specific one was called. What that specific one was called, but there's Spirit Detective on the GBA, which is a lot of fun. I really, really, really enjoyed it. I don't remember for the life of me. And believe it or not, Atari put out all these games. Tournament Tactics. That's the one. Yu Yu Hakusho Tournament Tactics. Also Dark Tournament, where that's where I was getting names mixed up on the PS2. So I did play that as well. That's like a 3D fighter, which is really cool for Yu Yu Hakusho, because I mean, if you know the characters and it works well. I thought that was a great game. But Spirit Detective, really, really good. Highly recommend. And then I remember importing this particular game, and I couldn't play it, basically. But I imported it because I loved the series, and we got like minimal content for it. But it's Ankoki Fujutsu Kaihen. I imported it just to import it. I actually imported quite a few games. I imported the Pokemon TCG game. And then there was, I'm almost positive that I did this. Pokemon, I believe there was a sequel in Japan only, and I imported that as well. And I got them dirt cheap on eBay. Pokemon trading card game. Two, the Invasion of Team GR. So yeah, I imported that too. That was a little easier to play because basically what you do is you just mash the A button through all the text and then you play the card game.
Yeah.
Like that's what I had to do. So the reason I got the first one, which came out here, is because I think we got it for like $10 shipped, complete in box back in the day. Like I was a kid.
Yeah.
So we got it cheap. Bad. Yeah, my grandma was like all over eBay all the time. She was into jewelry and buying jewelry all the time. So she knew how to get around eBay, and it was a good time. So is there anything else you want to touch on?
No, I think that was like the last big thing, just because I know it's like, you know, try to keep the tradition. Like, hey, here's one of the anime that I have that I play. And like, I happen to physically at least have one of the games that's tied in, but I haven't even thought about it because I haven't played it in years. It's one of the, funny enough, this is like one of the early games that I got when I actually got a 360.
Was that
just because you're like, oh yeah, was that one? And I, over the years, kicked myself in the butt because there was a time where I got rid of like half of my 360 games at one point.
Yeah,
like, I never played them. They were just eating space, and I'm like, yeah, there's a good 20 30 40 bucks here worth of stuff that I traded in.
When did you trade to GameStop?
Well, you too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I did many GameStop trade-in regrets where you get absolutely nothing. You trade in 15 games to get one new game.
People underrepresent like how that whole process works. I think GameStop gets too much crap for it. Because to be fair, they have to then turn around and make a profit. And to some degree, that game at that moment might be worth a lot. And, you know, it doesn't matter what condition. They'll take it in complete crap or brand new condition. So, I mean, like, they're going to give you something other than that, or it's like, well, you could try to sell it on your own, and that's going to be a headache and a struggle. And I think there's a GameStop, they deserve a lot of crap they get, but when it comes to the game trading, there's some there's a lot of misrepresentation, or people think their game's worth more than it actually really is, considering that GameStop has to make sure it works, potentially, you know, refurbish something and then turn around and, you know, sell it and make a profit at the end of the day.
I sell Mercari. I get it. But I can't defend like the price points they give. Now, when they run their trade-in specials, that's a good time to trade. That's a fair price, I believe. So they were doing that a lot during like 2020 to 2022. And I thrifted all the time. So at one point I collected like 17 copies of Wii Sports. And yeah. I don't know if you remember then, but they were highly sought after, even though there were millions and millions of them out there. People wanted it because they were getting back into gaming. And like that was a game that captured, you know, the whole family audience. And so they were selling for like $25 to $30. And like GameStop would give you like $17 a copy loose. Like it didn't have to have a case. So like that was during like a trade-in special. Like that's a banger. When you get it for like, you know, a loose disc for like $2-3. So like that added up. When they do the trade-in specials, they're great. But I did want to bring up one more thing just because I've been wanting to talk about it. Do you remember, Rurouni Kenshin, right?
Into it, but I remember it. Okay. I watched some episodes.
So Rurouni Kenshin and Yu Yu Hakusho are my two favorite animes. And did you ever watch the Samurai X OVAs?
That I didn't ever get the chance to watch.
I feel like... Especially
it's supposed to be like his background.
Yeah.
From what I understand.
Yep. It's background because like in the anime, he's very much doesn't like to pull the blade, and like he fights with flipping the blade around to hit
the back of the blade. Yeah. The dull blade. Yeah.
Yeah. So like that's how he is. But in Samurai X, he's not that way. So you see like the backstory of why he becomes that way. So it's like this transformation. He saw all the war and everything going on and like had, you know, was having the flashbacks and the things that happened. And oh my God, it's just such a phenomenal series. I definitely recommend. Did you ever watch it when it was on Toonami at all?
That's where I would have watched it.
Yeah, man, I highly recommend. Like if there's anything that you want to try to make time for anime wise, like that's one that I would definitely look into. They actually made, I have not watched them, but there are some live action versions of it in Japan. They made some live action versions. And I want to say that there's two of them. I could be wrong, but there is, oh my God, listeners, there is five of them. There are five Japanese Rurouni Kenshin, not all five. I can't contest all five. I only thought there was two. Why a very mixed bag? Like, I've heard people say it's like it's not terrible. Other people like it's. I do feel like this should be an anime that's easy to translate. Like I feel like a Hollywood version of this, like it should be pretty easy to translate. Having read the manga and watching the anime, plus watching the OVAs, like this shouldn't be a hard one to do. Like Yu Yu Hakusho would be like a more difficult one to do. You know what I mean? I guess if you want to check out Rurouni Kenshin 1-5 films, holy cow,
apparently there's a second TV series that started airing July of last year.
No way.
Yeah, Rurouni Kenshin, pretty much.
What, 2023?
Yeah, started airing July 7th, 2023. It says the present, but there's only 24 episodes. I don't know if it's already done or not.
Whoa. Official trailer
came out. That 24th episode came out December 15th.
Okay. I'm looking at the trailer. Animation looks like.
I just go from.
I mean, it looks
like the old series to digital.
It looks like they did it right from that to this. Like it doesn't look bad. It looks. I see him doing like the manga stylized lines when they move and yeah. Okay. Okay, well, then I have to watch this. I didn't know about this.
I guess
this.
The curiosity is, because just cursory look, I don't know if it's they restarted it or it's continuing on the original show. Or yeah, it's based off any one of the mangas that came out, you know, years after the anime.
Aniplex put it out, too. I have to look. It looks like it premiered at 23 last year in the U.S.
But wow. Hey, you learned something new.
Yeah, that's
maybe that'll
that's
help really... you get back into it.
Yeah, I'll absolutely have my list of stuff to check out with the anime, and this is on there. Like I said, I've been wanting to check out that Chainsaw Man because I've heard so many good things, and I haven't watched My Hero Academia. And what was the other big one that you were like, you got to watch this last week? It was
One Punch Man.
Yeah, One Punch Man. Yeah, so that is on my list. I think this is at the top of my list. Because I love Rurouni Kenshin, but is this something that you would check out, like the original series? Would you check out like the OVAs? And
yeah, I probably need to get back into actually rewatching because it's one of those, you know, good series. It's mm-hmm. just I never actually sat down and actually watched it.
Yeah, I think it's one that you would absolutely love for sure. Like it's up your alley. Like you like a lot of those, like Toonami, anime that aired on Toonami, like. A lot of like really good yeah. stuff. And this one it was very, very heavy on story. And then obviously in the OVA, like a lot of backstory. Like it's very heavy on story. Like in it, it pulled your emotions in so many different ways. Like it's just so good. I don't want to ruin anything, but it has a good plot. And I recommend watching the OVAs too. I think the third OVA was one I did not like. I want to say I can't remember exactly. There was one that I didn't like, but it's worth checking out. I mean, maybe start the OVAs so that you're aware of the backstory, and then you get it when the series starts. Why he is the way that he is, like it makes sense.
Yeah.
You see the transformation of a human being that's been through hell and back. So I like it.
I just want to say that I did finally find it. The series readapts the original manga story, so it's not a continuation. It's a readaption.
Okay,
I mean, so they're essentially redoing it. I don't know if there's going to be
changes straight on the anime. Or, I mean, based on the manga.
On the manga, yeah.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Yeah.
I guess if you had 20 years between the show, you might as well, you know, do a soft reset.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the manga is different than the anime. I wouldn't say significantly, but it's one that's like different enough that I can recommend both.
Yeah, or hopefully this time it'll be more accurate to the actual original manga.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, the anime is amazing. I love it. It is my favorite. Yu Yu Hakusho, I think, is probably second, but they're both there in competition. I'm just like so attached to this anime. It's not even funny. There was a lot of stuff from that era that just captured me. Like we talked about card captors and things like that. Like I love it. I really, really, really love that old hand-drawn style of anime. So
no, unless there's anything else you wanted to talk about, I think that pretty much covers what we're doing. Obviously it's going to be shorter episode this week, unfortunately, because it's kind of pre-recorded because, you know, other life kind of gets in the way sometimes.
But. Yep. Yep. So we appreciate everybody watching or listening. Be sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel, but you can also go to thegamejunctionpodcast.com. That will show all platforms for audio that we are on. And if you want to go to linktree.com/gamejunction, that is linktr.ee/gamejunction. As every platform that we are on, put stuff out on social media every day. That's where you're going to find all the promo for stuff coming up and the things that we're going to be doing. There's going to be a lot more hinting at things that are coming up on there as far as videos and content and stuff like that. But we have exclusive stuff on there every single day. And of course, if you want to become a YouTube member, that helps out the channel and the podcast very much. Everything that does come through funnels back through to support the show. And we appreciate all of you who are members, and we appreciate all the downloads as well. So if you do find us on an audio platform and you enjoy the show, be sure to download because it helps us a lot. Every download counts and every person counts. So we appreciate everybody listening and watching. So you guys have a great night, day, evening, whatever it is, and be sure to drink your water.